The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Dre Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. No AAA today. We got some USFL to cover, as well as the NFL draft this week as well. All right, Nathan, what we got for USFL?
Yeah, jumping right into it, we're going to go ahead and start with the USFL Offensive Player of the Week, that being Birmingham Stallions QB Alex Magoo. We'll read out his stat line, you know, when the game comes, but he was just astonishing. I know that Jamar Smith, he's out for the rest of the season with his finger injury. I hope his finger's doing okay. But in his absence, Alex Magoo had a great performance. The Defensive Player of the Week being Michigan Panthers linebacker Frank Ginda, who had 10 tackles, one interception, and one pass defended. The Panthers picking up a big one against the Stars. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And of course, the special teams player of the week being Houston Gamblers wide receiver Anthony Ratliff Williams, who had four returns for 136 yards and a long of 47 yards. Just let's go and jump right into our first game of the weekend, being the New Orleans Breakers versus the Houston Gamblers, which the Breakers were able to get the win 38-31. This was really a back and forth game overall. A lot of points being scored, a lot of yardage. It seemed like defenses just did not get off the bus in this game. But the Breakers were able to pull through at the end. And I really think this speaks to a lot of what happened last week, where they weren't able to get into the end zone all week, but now they converted on 5 assist attempts in the red zone and scoring touchdowns. So I think it's a big flip from what happened last week. Alex, starting with you, what did you see from this Breakers team, and how did they improve over the weekend?
Yeah, just looking at overall, this game was, I think, the only game where defense wasn't played at all, really. I mean, you look at the Showboats, which would be our next game. They really didn't play defense against the Stallions. But this game, entirely, neither team played defense. If you look at the Breakers, their offense continued to fire on all cylinders. You have the quarterback, Bethel Thompson, continuing what he did last week. 251 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. But one thing I looked at is their running back, their stud running back from last week, Anthony Jones, was out-carried by running back Wes Hills, with 18 carries, 110 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Hills really looked really good in this game. I was kind of disappointed that Anthony Jones didn't get the bulk of the carries, but I guess they relied on Hills here with his ability to run the ball. But you also had their tight end, Sage Surratt, 11 receptions, 121 yards. He seems to be the go-to target for Bethel Thompson. We saw last week he did a great job with that, and this week he did as well. I was really disappointed with wide receiver Jonathan Adams. He only had one reception for 6 yards. I thought he would be the go-to guy for Bethel Thompson. I expect him to do much better. Then the Gamblers did a great job in coverage on him. But overall, you look at this Breakers team, they got two good running backs. Either one can dominate a game. We've seen it both weeks. Their quarterback has played really well, probably most consistent we've seen so far out of besides Magoo, maybe. So I think this Breakers team is prepared for a good season, maybe make the playoffs this season.
Yeah, I agree, Alex. Just like what Nathan said, last week the problem for the Breakers was not being able to finish drives and finally put the ball in the end zone. And in this case, it was the complete opposite. I know defense is a little bit of a worry, but their offense is really, really deep. They have playmakers all over the field. Sage Surratt looked absolutely incredible. It's as Bethel Thompson's number one target in this. I expect Jonathan Adams, just like Alex said, to be better. But finishing drives, 5 out of 6 in the red zone, scoring touchdowns, that is how you improve. And a really, really good win for them in week two.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and speak on the Gamblers a little bit. Of course, you know, you got quarterback Kenji Bahar. I mean, he turned the ball over 3 times, throwing 3 interceptions. At what point do you look at him and say, you're not the guy to be doing this? Of course, you know, he had good offensive production. He had those 3 touchdowns. He had 200 yards of passing. But you look at the main mistakes being the turnovers, and that really ends up costing a game. That's 3 different possessions where he just turns the ball over, and the Breakers get different opportunities. I don't think the way they're using Terry Wilson as to come in and just try to run the ball, that's just not going to work for the Gamblers. They need to really come down to make a decision on where he needs to fit in the offense. If he just needs to be that quarterback two who comes in when Bahar plays terrible, which we've seen him play, or he just, you know, they're trying to use him like Taysom Hill, and it's just not working.
Yeah, I think Kenji Bahar has got to be sat next week, considering the Gamblers are 0-2.
Yeah, I mean, he has not looked good. All right, moving on to the second game from Saturday. The Birmingham Stallions took on the Memphis Showboats in what was a slaughter, the final score being 42-2. I'll spend a lot of time talking about the Stallions in a minute, but to start with the Showboats, your offense doesn't put up a single point. Your defense gets you 2 points, which, you know, get on them. But for the most part, the Stallions offense just drove the length of the field every possession and just embarrassed the Showboats defense. On the flip side, the Stallions defense completely embarrassed the Showboats offense. It felt like every single play, Brady White was getting pressured in the backfield. The Showboats offensive line, which I thought did such a great job last weekend, it seems like they got a bunch of 10-year-olds to come and suit up for him, which, you know, did not work out well. Of course, on the flip side, you had the Stallions offense, Alex Magoo. I know I talked about a stat line, 21 completions out of 28. Talk about efficiency, 301 yards and 4 touchdowns. He also had 6 carries for 32 yards. And the main thing, the Stallions were able to go 4-for-4 for redstone touchdown attempts, which was huge, averaging 7.6 yards per play. That's basically almost a first down at that point. And then I think the biggest impact was made by running back Zaquandre White, who, you know, with Bo Scarborough being placed on injured reserve this weekend, he got a lot of carries, not as many as CJ Mirable, but he did get 8 carries for 72 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he definitely used up his carries well. Honestly, I think he could be running back 1 on this team.
Yeah, I think the Stallions really showed out this week. You look at the Showboats, their defense could not stop anything. Alex and Bue just dotted up that entire secondary. You had Zaquandre Wright and CJ Marable running through it. I think the offensive line this week was very much improved. We kind of ragged on it last week, Nathan, with their inability to just block for the running back. But we saw both these guys had the ability to get in space, get some open runs, and just play smash mouth football. You had tight end Jay Sternberger, who's continued to be the favorite target for Magoo, with 5 receptions, 127 yards. I think that was good for him. We've seen Jay Sternberger, like I mentioned, just be the continued main guy for Magoo. I think it's great for him. He also had Thaddeus Moss, Nathan mentioned him last week, get his first reception in the USFL, which was a touchdown. Thought that was kind of interesting to see there. But one guy that really stood out to me was linebacker Rashad Smith on the defensive side for the Stallions, who had 5 tackles, 2 sacks, and a forced fumble. We know that the Stallions no longer have DeMarcus Gates, who is now in the NFL with the Chicago Bears. And when I was kind of worried coming into the season, how they're going to be able to replace the production he had. I think he was 2nd in sacks last season, maybe 3rd. Maybe he led the team in it. So getting a guy in Rashad Smith to get going and have those 2 sacks was good, especially with the guy in Skibby Wright, who was the main guy that defense out. But for the Showboats, like you mentioned, Nathan, last week I thought they played the Stars great. And they just fell on their face this week coming out of the gates. Brady White did not play well. Then they tried to put in Ryan Willis for a drive. He looked atrocious out of his depth. But outside of like Vinny Papale, one of the wide receivers, it was like nobody in the receiving corps could get open to save their lives. They had Ryan McDaniel, they had John Franklin III. Gray knows all about him. Next time in Auburn. But the Showboats, they were my team of the week last week. But this week, it was like a tale of two different games. I was very disappointed.
I would be better. Too. I would be. This was atrocious. Gray, do you remember youth football when you'd have all these teams, you know, as NFL teams, you have the Cowboys and Buccaneers. Yeah, it's almost like they put one of those teams out there, honestly. But what did you see? Obviously, this defense, the Stallions defense, missing Scooby Wright and also missing JoJo Tillery, which, you know, those are really, really good guys. Those guys often lead the defense in tackles. So what have you seen from this defense in the absence of those two guys?
Honestly, you got to think that the Stallions are the deepest and most complete team in this entire league, especially on that defensive side. We talked all about their offense and Magoo with Jamar Smith out and how well he's played in the running back room, even though Scarborough's hurt, and wide receivers and Jay Sternberger being that guy. But this defense is unbelievably impressive, especially with missing some of their leading tacklers like that. Just shows how deep this team is. They're incredible at stuffing the run. We saw that last week and this week. I mean, held Alex Collins to just 37 yards on 11 carries, and nobody else was able to. They just weren't able to run the ball. The Showboats weren't able to get any rhythm at all. Only got in the red zone one time, and didn't score offensively, it just shows how deep and how good this Birmingham defense is. And combine that with that offense, I mean, this Stallions team looks unstoppable right now.
Oh, you know, let's go ahead and slow down this week too. You don't want to say anything just yet.
Oh,
let's
no, go ahead.
We'll see. Let's go ahead and move on to our first Sunday game, being the New Jersey Generals versus the Pittsburgh Maulers, who, you know, lost 20-3. I think that this result wasn't very surprising to me, speaking of the Maulers team has absolutely no one on it. I don't know. It's like auto-generated guys, you know, they're just spitting out clones and trying to put them in jerseys.
A running back 34, yeah.
They don't have brains. I don't know. This Generals team was just, you know, playing backyard football, just tossing around, and they just, you know, if they ended up in the end zone, it was whatever. They didn't. But it was one of those games where he turned it off after the first snap because he already knew who was going to win. Even with the Maulers having 30 minutes of possession, they managed to put up 3 points, three whole points. You know, I'll give them this. It's one more point than the showboat score. So that's I guess that's a little bit of improvement. They're not the worst team this week, but, you know, they're teeter tottering on that line. But this general team, we know how much talent they had. Of course, we saw the week one versus the Stallions. It just really didn't come to fruition. But I think that they're finally starting to kind of get their offense under control. I know DeAndre Johnson being more of a rushing quarterback, they tried to kind of force him in several situations where he just had to run the ball. But this week, they actually gave him some passing attempts. And to kind of preempt, just did not get the amount of playing time that I think he wants. But in this sense, it was just really a running back show and a running quarterback show, and it was much improved from last week.
Yeah, I turned this game on, and at the end of the first quarter, I wanted to gouge my eyes out. It was hard to watch, really hard to watch, including the Generals. Generals, just they're not as good as they were last year. It looks like without Kevontae Turpin, they're just absolutely lost on the offensive side of the field, as well as their quarterback, Luis Perez. DeAndre Johnson and Dakota Prucka do not inspire me whatsoever when they come on the field. I think Mike Riley has to just pick one guy and stick to it. This two-quarterback system, I know they beat the Maulers, but they only put up 20 points. Just does not work. I think they just need to stick with one and pick one. But yeah, their running back, Darius Victor, he was the bright spot on the offensive side of the ball, 15 carries, 71 yards, and a touchdown. Thought that was good to see. But the real big guy for this Generals team was their defensive end, Hercules Matafa, who recovered two fumbles. They kind of helped the Generals there and continue to stop the Maulers team when they were moving down the field. But looking at the Maulers team, like Nathan mentioned, this team is hard to watch, to be a fan of, if you are a fan of them. I'm not sure they do have any fans at this point, the way they played the last two seasons. But you have Troy Williams and James Morgan at quarterback. Neither of them can pass for over 100 yards. And both of them did have double-digit attempts. So not having 100 yards for that is a little bit mind-boggling for me. Nobody on their offensive side of the ball really does anything good. They can't run the ball. They can't pass the ball. I guess Isaiah Henning, the wide receiver, had 9 receptions, but they're only 53 yards. I just don't know what to do with this Maulers team. I mean, their defense is great, is somewhat good. It's the only reason they didn't get blown out like the Showboats did. But I'm at a loss for words to describe this Maulers team. They're just bad.
Yeah. They're struggling. And let me speak on the Generals for a second there, though. The Generals did not play a great game in this one. They were lucky to be playing the Maulers. And from now on in this league and the rest of the season and pretty much forever, you play the Maulers, you're basically getting a bye week, especially for some of the teams, some of the really good, deep teams that we have in this league. But it's hard to watch. I had 2.9 yards per play, 4 fumbles, 0-for-2, red zone touchdowns, got 3 points. No, this is bad. This is bad.
You know, I feel bad for saying this, but it's like when you have a special needs kid or make a wish kid running the football and someone forgot to tell the defense to not tackle him. I think that's one of those scenarios. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to our last game of the week, Michigan Panthers versus the Philadelphia Stars. Michigan Panthers ended up getting the win 24-10. And this game was a battle. It was a battle from the start. I think that these two defenses really are much improved from last season. I think that the Stars definitely had some holes in it still, and that's the reason they really lost this game. But quarterback Case Cook did not have a good game statistically. He threw two interceptions. He really did not do anything for the Stars team. Of course, he didn't even throw a touchdown, which to see Case Cook not throw a touchdown is really surprising. And on the flip side, quarterback Josh Love, he didn't really have a great game either, throwing two interceptions, but he at least had a touchdown thrown. I think really you look at this Michigan Panthers offense and what Reggie Corbin has been able to do for him, 11 carries, 131 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, he really carried this Panthers team. And like we talked about last week, Alex, how much they've been improved, and we were wondering, can they keep up? Can they put up the same performance they did in week one? Well, the answer is yes. And I don't know if it's a case of the Stars just not being as good as they were, or the Panthers just being that good.
Yeah, this was a battle of his defenses, and the Panthers obviously had the better defense coming into this game, and it showed. They not only allowing the Stars have 10 points, and the only time the Stars actually scored was because they got a they forced a turnover and they had good field position. They're able to march down the field and get some running game going. In the first half, I believe they only had like 7 rushing yards. So the Stars really struggled on the offensive side of the ball because the Panthers were so good on the defensive side of the ball. Like you mentioned, Nathan, Reggie Corbin really carried the load for the Panthers with Josh Love. A little bit of a struggle fest for him. But with Case Cookus, he really couldn't get anything going. I mentioned on the show last week that the Panthers were able to get up into him and force him to make bad reads and stuff like that. And really take away that run game, it was going to be tough for the Stars team to win. And it came to fruition with the Stars struggling to move the ball on the offensive side of the field. But you look at just the Panthers defense, like I mentioned, their linebacker Frank Ginda, like we mentioned, he was the player of the week for the defensive side of the ball with 10 tackles, interception, and pass defended. He really is one of the best, I think, defensive players in this league. I think he really pairs well with a guy in Scooby Wright. I think those are probably the best two linebackers we have in the league. But the Stars team, I think it was a rough week. You gotta get that running game going. It struggled the past 2 weeks. Last week, Cookus was your leading rusher. So I think you really just need to focus, get back to the drawing board on the running, running the ball and take the pressure off Case Cookus, who we saw got a little bit banged up at the end of the game. I believe he had a little bit of a knee injury there. He was hobbling up and down the field. So taking that pressure off him is going to be key for the Stars team if they want to continue, what they did last season.
Yeah, Case Cookus and the Stars really rely on Case Cookus and their wide receivers in the air in this game, and it kind of came back to bite them in terms of the outcome. But unbelievably impressed with the Panthers and their improvement from last season. I think their defense is probably the second best in this entire league behind the Stallions. I think they're on the tier of the Stallions and way above anybody else, but I really like both of these teams. I think these are the two teams that are going to be competing with the Stallions for the championship by the end of the year. I think the way Josh Love is playing, even though he had two interceptions in this game, the way Reggie Corbin is running the ball, that Panthers team, I really like them down the stretch.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a point in the game. It was one of the final possessions for the Stars. They were only down 17-10 at this point, and they were driving the length of the field, and they came down to a 4th-and-1, and they decided to throw the ball. And in modern day, it's really become a favorite thing to do, to throw the ball in 4th-and-1. And I'm just like questioning every single time they do it. Why not run the ball? Is it that difficult to get 1 yard running the ball?
The Eagles do it. They did it in the Super Bowl. We saw it multiple times with Jalen Hurts. I think it's just the Stars' offensive line is not very good.
Yeah, I don't know. It was one of those things. And, of course, you know, they got stopped, and the Panthers and Reggie Corbin went on to, go for a 60-yard touchdown run, which really sealed the game at that point. It was just one of those scenarios where if the result on that down is different, then we might be talking about a different victory in the scenario. Anyway, with the NFL draft just 3 days away, Gray, what do you have for us for the NFL?
Yes, before we start talking about the NFL draft, which is happening on Thursday, the first round will be Thursday. The second, third, and fourth round, I believe, will be on Friday, if I have that right. Alex, do I have that right? Or the second round is?
I believe. I think it's second.
It'll finish up on Saturday. But before we get into the top five picks and who we think is going to happen on Thursday, some breaking news that just hit social media as of very recently, as of this recording. The massive trade of Aaron Rodgers to the New York Jets is happening. The Jets get Aaron Rodgers, the pick number 15 in this on Thursday's draft, and a fifth round pick for this year, which is number 170. The Packers get pick number 13, a second round pick for this year, which is pick number 42, a sixth round pick for this year, which is number 207, and a conditional 2024 next year's second round pick, but that would then turn into a first round pick if Aaron Rodgers played more than 65% of the snaps in New York this year. So basically, Packers jump up two spots, or jump up two spots in this year's draft, get two other picks, and get the pick for next year. And if Aaron Rodgers plays 65% or more of the snaps, they'll get another first rounder for next year. The Jets just move back two picks in this, get Aaron Rodgers, and get a fifth round pick for this year. So, guys, what are your thoughts on this draft? Obviously, the four-time MVP for the Packers headed to New York.
It's about time. I mean, gosh, we were sitting here months ago talking about this trade might be happening very soon, and it seemed like everything just died down. And then over the weekend, they re-engaged talks, and, you know, it's one of those scenarios where you don't know if they're going to reach a decision or not based on what one team is asking for. And, of course, you know, if they come to an impasse, they're, you know, going to stop talking like they did. But in this scenario, they were finally able to get a deal done. It's about time that Aaron Rodgers left Green Bay. I think that you really look back on last season and how poorly the Packers performed based on the amount of talent they had. I know that Aaron Rodgers definitely did not feel like he you know, competed to his best stint. But now he joins a really, really talented Jets team, very young team that really could use a veteran quarterback, with how they've had to go through quarterbacks like Zach Wilson, who, you know, gosh, I'm not going to spend time talking about him. But it's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's a thing about age and regression with Aaron Rodgers. You don't know what he's going to look like coming into this season. You know, you can look towards Tom Brady's last season with the Buccaneers and kind of make a comparison there. But I think this Jets team will do significantly better this season and probably are going to be one of the top teams in the AFC.
Yeah, I think it's a win-win for both sides. I mean, look at the Packers, obviously going into rebuild now without Aaron Rodgers there. But they do have a guy in Jordan Love who they wasted a first-round pick on with Aaron Rodgers on the roster a couple years ago. And I think he has the ability to lead this team. I mean, picking up a first-round pick, which probably will be a first-round pick next year, as well as a second-round pick this year, are two big things for the Packers if they want to just rebuild this roster around Jordan Love. Or if Jordan Love were not to work out this season, to have that first-round pick next year, as well as their first-round pick to maybe nab a quarterback or trade up and get a guy and maybe Caleb Williams or Drake May or Bo Nix. But I think the Jets were a quarterback away last year. The way their defense played was probably one of the best in the league. Their offense, they have a lot of weapons. We saw it last year. But they just lack that quarterback. Like Nathan mentioned, they cycle through guys like Zach Wilson, Mike White, guys like that. So getting Aaron Rodgers to come in and fill that void at the quarterback position will be big for this Jets team, who I think, like Nathan mentioned, will be one of the top teams in the AFC this upcoming season.
All right, now, so moving on to the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. So I want to go ahead and ask y'all's top five picks. Obviously, the first five are Carolina Panthers will be selecting first overall, then the Houston Texans following, the Arizona Cardinals, the Indianapolis Colts, and then the Seattle Seahawks at number five. Alex, I'll start with you. Give me your first five picks and kind of tell me where you're thinking right now.
Okay, so we're the first overall pick. I got the Carolina Panthers taking quarterback Bryce Young. I think it's a no-brainer at this point, especially what C.J. Stroud did on the cognitive test results that were just released this past weekend. I think it's been a no-brainer all along for me that Bryce Young is the best quarterback in this draft class. What he did at Alabama was just amazing, especially with the limited talent he had there at the receiver. But I think if Bryce Young was 6'3", 6'5", this would have been not even a debate to start the NFL draft process. Because he's under 6 feet, it was a big thing for all these NFL teams. But he scored a 98% on this cognitive test compared to C.J. Stroud's 18%. So I think that's a really big thing for the Panthers, who have needed a good quarterback ever since Cam Newton decided he wanted to fumble a Super Bowl. Don't get me started on that. But the second overall pick, moving on, the Houston Texans, I had them taking Will Anderson Jr. I think this is probably a thing where they trade down. You look at C.J. Stroud, like I already mentioned, 18% of that cognitive test. Really a big red flag for I think, a lot of NFL teams, NFL executives. And also, he has the same agent as Deshaun Watson, who used to play for the Houston Texans. Obviously, that did not end well for either side there. So I think getting a guy in Will Anderson, if they were not to trade down, would be huge for this defense, who really lacks that main leader, that main guy. So I think getting him, who has the experience at Alabama, as just like D'Amico Ryans as head coach, will be big for Ryans as he rebuilds his roster and his image. Then you go to the third overall pick, the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're going to take Tyree Wilson, the edge out of Texas Tech. He's really an athletic freak. He's 6'6", 271. I think he's really good. We saw it at Texas Tech before he got injured last season, how explosive he is off the edge. And we know the Arizona Cardinals no longer have J.J. Watt and Zach Allen, both their two edges from last year, but with Watt retiring and Allen moving to the Broncos. So I think getting a guy, Tyree Wilson, who's arguably the second best edge on the board as of now, to replace those guys and get some talent on the defensive side of the ball, which are, like I mentioned, lost some key pieces there and might lose Buda Baker as well. But we've got Arizona Cardinals defense as they rebuild that. Then going to the fourth overall pick, at the Indianapolis Colts taking Will Levis. With C.J. Stroud on the board, I think he's a viable option here. But I've seen reports all around the internet and stuff like that where they mentioned that Will Levis is really the apple of the Colts' eye here. So I think getting Will Levis at four will be good for the Colts. And then fifth, the Seattle Seahawks. I had them taking Jalen Carter. This Seahawks team, you can see them maybe going Anthony Richardson here. But what they just gave Geno Smith contract-wise, I think they're going to try to stick with him, probably wait a few years to draft his replacement. And getting a guy, Jalen Carter, who's probably maybe the best defensive player in the draft this year. I think if he didn't have off-field issues, he'd probably be top three, maybe hopping Will Anderson. But with off-the-field issues, we've seen the Seahawks gamble on some guys in the past with similar off-the-field issues and have somewhat success with some of them. So I think getting Carter here, who will plug the defense, a hole in the defensive line, a defensive tackle, big for the Seahawks, who I think could make a big leap this year if they're able to get some guys like Jalen Carter in this draft.
I'm going to go ahead and just go through this really quick. Starting off, Bryce Young, I think, is a no-brainer at this point, you know, with all that stuff with the cognitives. But, you know, see the trap probably would have went to at this point. But he's an idiot. I don't know if he's all there mentally or not. I don't know if he's undiagnosed with Down syndrome or something. But he was not able to score very high on his test, so he will not be getting drafted in the top five, I do not believe. With number two, I think Will Anderson being a generational talent. Usually he'd probably go one, but in this instance, you know, the Houston Texans need a good guy on defense who really lead their defense at this point. So Will Anderson's going to go two. At three, Arizona Cardinals are going to go ahead and pick up Tyree Wilson. I think that they really wanted CJ Stroud to do well on his test, but he forgot to study. So, Will Anderson's not going to fall to at three anymore. Tyree Wilson is going to be the obvious choice. He's probably the best available at that point. The Colts are going to go ahead and stick with the guy in Anthony Richardson. They're definitely not going to consider a CJ Stroud at this point based on him not being able to fill the bubbles correctly on his test or his Scantron, whatever he did. And then the Seattle Seahawks are going to finish out by getting Devon Witherspoon, which is going to address a big secondary need.
Yeah, so for me, just like y'all, I think it's an obvious one. Panthers selecting Bryce Young. I think the past 3 or 4 weeks, that's been apparent to all NFL teams, including the Houston Texans drafting at two, which is why I think we could see them end up trading down. Same thing with the Cardinals. If somebody were to want to jump and take Anthony Richardson or Will Levis away from the Indianapolis Colts, who drafted four. But I do see the Texans just picking the best player available and taking Will Anderson, just like Alex said, with D'Amico Ryans starting with that first year, getting a guy like that, Will Anderson, who is by far the best football player in this whole draft. That's a generational talent at the edge spot. I think they go Will Anderson at number two. I think the Cardinals will select Tyree Wilson at three. He's risen up draft boards day by day by day, and it's starting to get to be apparent that the Texans are interested in him, drafting him at two. The Cardinals are very interested in him. The Seahawks are very interested in him. So there's three teams in the top five that are really liking Tyree Wilson as of recent. But I think the Cardinals draft him at three after Will Anderson goes to the Texans. I think the Indianapolis Colts ends up taking Will Levis. Apparently, he's been, just like Alex said, he's been really, really high on their boards for some reason. I don't understand that. I would pick Anthony Richardson there, maybe even C.J. Stroud over Will Levis, even though, just like Nathan said, he is kind of an idiot, apparently. But I do think they take Will Levis. And then the Seahawks, I could see them going best available. I could see them going and taking Jalen Carter, Devon Witherspoon, any guys like that. But for this instance, I'll have them taking Jalen Carter, who's a generational talent at nose guard, at defensive tackle. He's very versatile. And just like Alex said, if he didn't have the off-the-field issues, he'd probably be jumping a guy like Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson. I think that's he's an unbelievable player and very impressive to watch, but he's got some issues outside of the football field that need to be addressed and need to be considered when drafting and using this high of a pick on him. But the Seahawks, I think, will take him at five. So that'll wrap up our NFL draft discussion. Alex, I'll go ahead and let you get us out of here.
All right, fellas, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.